We at the Collective Perspective podcast have set out on a mission to understand some of the most impactful and controversial trends and topics in our lives today. Hi, I'm Jeff.
I'm Travis.
I'm DJ.
Can we find common ground in the middle in a peaceful manner?
Not for political gain,
but for real community benefit.
We believe so. As veterans and concerned citizens, we are bringing together diverse views and fact-based research to navigate this tough terrain in search of a viable path forward.
Only time will tell, but if we listen with open minds and try to understand each other, we just may find a solution, or two, collectively.
That is why we care about what you have to say. If something piques your interest or ruffles your feathers or tickles your fancy or whatever else you'd like, leave us an audio message at podinbox.com/collective-perspective-podcast, all one word, or directly on our show page at mtsjax.fm/collective-perspective-podcast. You'll have to log in, but that won't cost much more than your time.
We'll be discussing your messages on the show, whether you give us a high five or say, hey, you better do some fact checking, fool. As long as it's positive and it's your perspective, we'll possibly give you some airtime. But remember, it needs to be family-friendly and not defamatory in nature.
Hey, everybody. This is Collective Perspective Podcast, and we're here in sunny Jacksonville, Florida, talking with you
collectively
from the Main Street Suite at Mixed Theory Studios.
Collectively.
Is there anything else you're doing or your sister doing that helps the cause besides writing the book? Because obviously letting people know your story, is there anything?
Oh, yeah. We train all the new JSO recruits coming out of the academy. They're required to do an HT, human trafficking training, and we do that for them. And we've trained doctors, we've trained teachers, we've trained moms, dads, hotel staff.
I'm a medical professional. I've been a nurse for almost 20 years. I've been doing ER nursing, ICU, everything. Even the military, as far back as probably 10 years ago, they were doing human trafficking modules and training online. But the one thing that I don't think that has ever been taught to us, even now in nursing, is what do we do if we come across someone who's being trafficked or was trafficked and is looking for help? Or how do we even identify somebody? I mean, yes, there are red lights, you know, the sirens that go off say, hey, ding, ding, this person is probably being, you know, something's going on. How do we, is there another way to identify somebody? How often do they come in contact with healthcare, and who do we report it to?
Anytime they would need to go, like a victim would need to go to the hospital, the goal is to not have to go to the hospital.
Right.
And really it depends on the type of trafficker. So like a gorilla pimp is like kind of what our trafficker was. Very aggressive, very
physical.
Yeah.
In your face, this is it.
Yeah. Like energy is very, it's just a lot. And then you have like a Romeo who is more like a boyfriend. And that's why a lot of young people, young women, and boys, it happens to both. They don't feel like they're being trafficked because that's their boyfriend. It just really depends on what type of person you're dealing with. For me, it would be like eye contact. You're definitely taught to not have eye contact. It's disrespectful. And in that culture, it's just a no. You don't do that. The person that they're with, because there are women traffickers as well, are doing all the speaking for them. Like, you know, not allowing them to speak for themselves, the branding.
Actual marks or scars on them?
It could be marks or scars or tattoos.
That was one of my questions. Are there markings that can help ID them?
Yeah, so it's still hard to pinpoint it because a girl has her boyfriend's name or boyfriend's name tattooed on her 5 different times doesn't mean that he's a trafficker. But it can mean that. And I feel like in the medical world, the biggest thing is asking, using a verification tool. And it asks questions in not such a way where, depending on the tool you use, where it doesn't come off as like you're trying to figure out if they're being trafficked. Mm. Where they're more just, you know, questions about violence or...
Well, those are questions that we do ask. There are those same questions, though, that some people, I think they gloss over them. Some of the professionals are just like, well, that sounds kind of corny. Why would I even ask that? But it's proven that it takes time before someone will answer that question appropriately or in a way that it catches you off guard. After that, there's no real training for us on what do we do after that. Who do we call? CPS? The police?
The police. It would really just be local law enforcement. I mean, if the hospital is partnered with different organizations, they come out and they do like advocacy works. Like say for instance, there's a young person that comes in, they've been raped. Then that activates the call to this organization and then they send an advocate out to sit with them, speak with them, get the testing done. Those types of things. And I think that that's something that needs to be created when you don't know or have someone, that person that's trained to come in, that's on the staff to build that rapport and have that conversation.
Those are generally called SANE nurse, sexual assault nurse examiner.
Right.
They're the ones that are trained to come in and do the evidence collection, the questions and everything. And not every hospital has one. And I think many hospitals expect the nurses, male, female, doesn't matter. We can all be trained to do it. It's almost like they expect all the nurses to know how to do that without the training.
That's unfortunate because there are some amazing people out here that are just super passionate about it.
Oh,
and they
absolutely
make these trainings and they're great. But I feel like being trained by someone who lived it, you could tell me the books, you could tell me the statistics, you could give me that information. But when it comes to body language, when it comes to just being able to identify something isn't right, it's just instinct. I know. So I might not be 100% right, but I can tell if something's going on that shouldn't be going on.
Right. So you obviously have some intuition, but also not so giving on the trust right away. Who is somebody that a victim can trust? When we spoke privately, I was like, well, I think healthcare professionals are probably in the top five as far as who you can trust and maybe the somebody that's not part of the game.
I agree with that for the most part because I feel like the standard of coming in, it's not as easy to be corrupt in that sense because you don't know when someone's coming in. You don't know like when there's an emergency that's happening. And I think that it's just hard to trust people, period, especially when you've experienced what we've experienced with trafficking. And it's just an intuition thing. It's an energy thing. It's just taking that gamble that you're going to get the help that you're actually needing.
You said in our conversation too that you and your sister work with law enforcement and that you provide trainings. Can you tell us some more about your involvement in that and how has that progressed from the time you were taken until now?
For JSO, we do the new recruits at the academy and it's just a training on like the statistics, the numbers, and our story, our testimony of what we went through here and like our experience with law enforcement. And I think it's impactful when we train them. I know it's impactful because it actually happened to us. So it's way different than having someone up there who can't speak to that. So I think that definitely makes them pay attention. Like, wow, you went through that, you survived, you're thriving, and now you're training us.
It'd be like me giving the training.
It's not, it's just not the same. So,
right.
But the difference between then and now is we're evolving. JSO is definitely evolving in a positive way. There are just, you know, sergeants and detectives and deputies that are passionate about this issue, and they're going to do everything in their power to train and make sure their detectives and police officers know what they're doing, know what to look out for, have resources to help if they do walk into a situation like that and to ask more questions and to be more empathetic. That's something that I definitely talk about when I do train, is like empathy. We didn't experience empathy when we experienced JSO 20 years ago.
I can see that. In the nursing field, in the emergency room especially, of getting to build a rapport within minutes of meeting a patient, you hear their story and it's like, okay, there are some people that are really good at it. And there are some people that suck at it, even in the medical field. And I see them. I'm on the inside and I can see from the outside even that that really does help treat somebody. It being able to empathize with them. No, you're not going to be able to say, yeah, I know what you're feeling. No, that's not what they're asking for. They're asking, can you understand where I'm coming from, kind of thing. And some people, they just kind of wall it off and like, yeah, I don't want to think about that. Let's move on. Next question. And I think the person that you're talking to or that's talking to them, they see that and they're like, all right, well, I'm just shutting down.
Right. You never know who you're connected with that day. And it could be someone who really needs help but can't say it. I do like now, being that COVID has happened, they don't allow extra people to go back with them for the most part. I know doctor's offices don't. I'm not really sure about ER, but I think that separation.
The ER now, I liked it because, no, unless you're a minor, there are no visitors. We're not trying to spread the germs. Many places now, I can't say all of them, but many, even in Florida, are allowing one visitor, and they're not allowing people to swap. You know, once that visitor's in there, they're in there. If they leave, they can't come back in. I do like that. And some people put up a big fight about it. But, hey, that's our rule, and we're not trying to have people walking up and down the hall spreading the germs. I do like it because it can, and it could. I don't know how it helped during the pandemic. I would imagine it helped a lot, like you're saying, having just the patient there to be able to speak more freely.
Right, to not be watched and controlled. But I think it goes back to paying attention, and you can't save everyone. Unfortunately, that day, it might not be their day to escape. And I guess just in this work, I have to find peace in knowing, like, I can only do what I can do. If I can control everything, if I just knew everything that worked, then we could put it in place. But we don't. It's being aware. People are not aware.
Like Jeff said earlier, not until it's their kid, then they're aware, overly aware.
Right.
According to the ctdatacollaborative.org, the age of victims do vary. They do have a spike of over 19% of the population being from 9 to 17 years old, and 0 to 8 years old is around 4%. Any type of number in this category is horrific. Are there enough people being educated in school? What can be done to help these kids?
So a lot of things are changing just in the world. So we're going in the right direction in this work. And as far as education for the young people, I don't know the exact law, but I do know that they were working on curriculum to teach in Florida, to teach our young people, our kids from first grade and up. So like appropriate curriculum for that age and that grade. It's almost like, you know, sex ed, but it's like teaching them what
it
is.
Well, it has to go beyond don't talk to the stranger.
Right. They're creating and building age-appropriate curriculum. I do know that they're doing that in the state of Florida. So we are going in a good direction. It's just constant work.
What category of women would you say, in your opinion, because the other staggering stat about this age groups is that, yeah, 9 through 17 is a big spike, but also 30 through 38 is 18% of the population.
Wow.
Where are these women coming from?
It didn't just start in 30. Like, it didn't start like that. It's just that's what data has been collected. I believe it's either 0.2 or 0.4% of young people who are trafficked, they survive. So at the age of 12. So our chances, our odds was 0.4% of surviving.
You should have ended up dead is basically what you're saying.
Correct.
But you didn't. That's
you're a fighter. Right.
That's great. Right.
And that was mind-blowing to me
point
to even
four.
See that. It's 0.4,
not
okay.
Not even 1.4.
Point.
0.4%. And I learned that just in writing our book, just, you know, looking up the facts and the statistics, and it's like, wow. That's so low, it's almost impossible
to
beat those
out.
Odds.
Yeah. 99.6.
And a lot of people's first traffickers are their parents, their mom or dad or both parents.
Oh, you mean like all the parents that let their kids play with Michael Jackson?
And R. Kelly.
And R. Kelly.
Yeah, I think their parents should be
held accountable. I agree with you. I feel like anytime a person is sold for an exchange of something, whether it's money or whatever you're gaining, it's going to someone else other than that person who is having sex. That's trafficking. But I mean, back then that was not even a thought. They were just pawning their kids off to get a music deal to become famous.
Yeah. What money?
Well, you say your trafficker kept you pretty much confined and was just one person and he had homies. Was it just him? Or did he have to pay tithes to someone else above him to keep operating?
I don't know the answer to that, but my assumption is no. He was a straight just trafficker. He wasn't like, it's a pimp. It's still the same thing, but like a pimp to me is like an organization. He was just in the streets and saw an opportunity to profit off of three young girls.
Do you think after you escaped that he maybe got some more?
I mean, it's totally possible because we were, you know, we were labeled as like child prostitutes. The information that we gave them then, it was like, oh, you were prostituting. There's no such thing as a child prostitute. How does a child prostitute? And you'll be surprised. And when I'm engaging with other agencies and just partnering.
How could your perspective be that? It seems ridiculous.
It does. But it's literally not thinking before you speak, not processing the information and educating yourself. If you're in a field and this is what you're saying you want to do and you're going to do it, you're going to have to master it. You're going to have to educate yourself. Learn the lingo, learn verbiage that is not appropriate. Because some survivors don't like being called survivors. Some young people don't like to be called victims. They don't like to be rescued. But it just depends on who you're talking to, and it's building rapport with that person.
I am sensitive to it, and I understand why you don't say his name.
Right.
But can you talk a little bit about why you wouldn't say his name?
Yeah. I mean, it happened to us here in Jacksonville, Florida, and he right. has family that's still here. He was murdered a year after Jessica. So Jessica was murdered in 2007. I believe he was murdered in 2008. So he's not alive, but he has family. And I feel like his family doesn't have to carry that cross for him. Like, he's dead. And maybe one day we'll say his name. I don't know.
My perspective was that you just didn't want to give him the dignity of saying his name.
No, I've never looked at it like that. It was more like just being smart, safety.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you don't never know, like, retaliation. Yeah. And that's not what we're doing this for.
Because you never know who might have a hidden agenda.
Like, right. Correct. Yeah. You just don't know. It can just go all different types of ways when you're dealing with the streets. He knows what he did. We know what he did, and he's dead. So,
and it kind of keeps your past from, like, catching up with you.
Correct. I mean, because you just never know. Again, the streets is a deep, dark ocean.
Exactly. Ongoing.
So, no, it's just his name is Squeaky in the book.
Gotcha. Have you ever heard of the forgiveness challenge?
No.
I only came across it last night, but it is a biblical thing. Forgiveness is the most powerful release of any type of mental issues. I was listening to this video and she was talking about how she was at the end of a rope. She was free, but she was still doing jobs because that's how she knew how to make money. And now she was able to have the money to herself. And she was at the point of suicide and drugs and alcohol. And she came to the point where she was going to kill herself. And her best friend told her, have you thought about just forgiving those people? And she said that is the only thing that saved her life.
I can understand that. I feel like that's how forgiving people, this is just overall, forgiving people is not for them. And when you learn right. that yeah. and when you understand that, then you can step into your own healing and forgiveness. Because when we hold on to, like, why would I forgive them? They did this horrible thing to me. But if you don't start there to find your peace there, then you're going to just go in circles. It's almost like being on a hamster wheel. I have forgiven our trafficker a long time ago. I just had peace that karma and what goes around comes around. I had peace in that. And I know that I wasn't going to have to lift a finger. I wasn't going to have to say anything, do anything, because what you put out is what you get back. And that's how I found my peace in that.
Well, let's thank God you're not walking at the flea market. Let's say you like, I like going to the flea market.
Ran into him before at the flea market after he got out of jail. We were at the King's Flea Market and she was like, she had hit me, Jessica. She's like, so-and-so he's in here. I just seen him. We got to go. So, because he had threatened to kill Jessica when he was in jail. We had got word that.
Why is everybody after Jessica?
She was really feisty.
Like, is she the oldest?
No, she's middle. Nicole is the oldest. I'm the youngest, Jessica, Nicole.
Okay.
And Jessica was like always really vocal. Nicole's always just very quiet. And obviously he was angry and whatever he felt because of him having to go to jail. But it was something about Jessica. Like, he threw her off the balcony and she pushed back more than we did. And rest in he peace, didn't Jessica. Like that. Right. Like, you almost like Scrappy Doo.
Yeah.
She's feisty. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
Had puppet power.
Yeah.
What is the best advice that you can give a young child to avoid this? And what advice do you give to your own children in regards to this situation?
My advice to young people would be slow down.
Do your kids know that this happened to you?
My oldest, my 10-year-old, he knows, but he doesn't understand.
Right.
Like, he was at the book launch and he started, right. I didn't even know because there were books everywhere. So he was just sitting down and then he came up to me. He was like, "Who is Squeaky?" And I'm like, "You've been reading the book?" And he was like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "Okay, put the book down. You're not reading that right now." And we just kind of talked about it a little bit, but I didn't go in detail because I know he's not going to understand right now. So I feel like when he gets to a certain level of maturity to understand, he knows what I do. He knows what my profession is. So he understands it. And, you know, the internet is really big and he's really smart. I'm pretty sure he's Googled it and did his own research.
Doesn't maybe understand it.
Correct. Like, how do you really understand that at 10?
I tell you right now, if anybody came and messed with his mama, though.
Oh, yeah.
Says they're about to reckon.
Yeah, something. Like, he might have, you know, feelings that he hasn't expressed or developed, or even, you know, just from the amount of the book that he did read before mm-hmm. he asked you.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Because the book, it doesn't take long to get into it. Like, yeah. We just get into it. So, yes. My advice for, like, just young people or even parents is be in your child's business. And there's ways to do it. And I'm still mastering, like, patience and all of that. I'm not the perfect parent. Like, I'm learning, but doing it with love. Like, when you try to force things on your kids, like, well, why are you hanging out with this person? I don't like what you're wearing. Don't post that. Why are you talking to these people? You have to come at it at a certain age. That's only going to make them want to do it more.
Yeah. Because
mm-hmm. we've all been teenagers. We've all been kids.
I've got two of them now.
Right. So that is building that rapport with your kid where they can feel comfortable enough to come to you and have those conversations, like smoking or sex or whatever it is, and not making them scared about telling you, because there's a way that could work for your family. It might not work for someone else's family, but like, I had friends growing up who their parents allowed them to smoke, but it was at home. You know what I'm saying? And it's because they're going to do it either way.
My parents let me drink alcohol as long as I stayed home.
Well, I had some friends like that too.
15, 16 years old.
It's just what works. That sounds crazy, but I'm not giving any ideas and I'm not saying that to do this.
We don't condone that.
Right. But what works for your family works for it.
This was in the 80s. So. Things were different in the 80s.
Yes.
God, we're old.
Yeah.
Just stay in your kid's business, like, but in a loving way.
Right.
Like, so, yeah, let me see your phone. Like this is why I'm looking. I'm looking because I care about you. And it's so much easier for a trafficker to get a hold of a young person because of social media. There are, like, hackers and crazy, weird people that get on roadblocks.
Oh, I believe it.
There has been stories. I've had
son's on roadblocks. He's like, oh, I don't know.
And it's happening to a lot of boys. I had a woman come to me and she was just so upset. She was so crying. Her son had been on roadblocks and these people create these accounts and they act like they're their age and they, like, start talking to them and it's like catfishing. But then they started like talking during the game. I guess you could talk during like Roblox or something like that. And she was like, the person that was writing him, it had been like, it's almost like grooming. It started with, you know, just getting to know him. Oh, I'm 13. I live here. And then, of course, they are like, oh, yeah, I'm 13, too. And I live in so-and-so. And then they kids will talk.
Oh, yeah.
And then it turned into, your mom doesn't love you. You should run away. I can come pick you up.
It doesn't go quickly, but it does happen over
time. It's a process. Thank God her son like went to her with it. Like, this kid said that you don't love me. See, he was going to her because his feelings were hurt, because it was like, that's not true. I know you love me, but this kid said this to me. So then she started reading it, and then it was scary. All the conversation that had happened. And I don't know if y'all know, like, but it's in Jacksonville, and it's a group of people or an organization, I'm not sure. But they bait people, men, who they act like they're young kids. They act like they're 12. They act like they're 11 and 13. And they meet these grown people who, like, are trying to meet up with them.
Like sting operations.
Right. And then they blast them. So when they pull up, they're like, oh, you thought 12-year-old Susan was going to be here. And it's, you're 30 years old.
Yeah, I've been seeing that show, yeah.
Yeah, it's here. They do that here. Here's the thing. If they're doing it with them, who else have they done this with?
Exactly.
Who else have they met up with?
They just got caught that time.
Correct.
Yeah.
And these are grown men thinking that, and they know how old these kids are. It's not a secret. In the conversation, it's, oh, I'm 12. So you knew before you pulled
exactly.
up. Exactly. So you are aware. The only thing you could have been thinking of doing is something
not
premeditated.
Right. Yeah. Like I said, I have teenagers, and I've talked to them about it, and I've asked them if anyone has done anything like that. And they're pretty good when they're on the games, the Roblox, the first-person shooter games, to where they're only talking with their friends that I know and that they know. Other people come on, and my son, he'll roast them. He knows enough to be like, yeah, this person's fake, and I'm just going to roast them. And he just blasts them the whole time.
Right. And I think that that's a strength. It's almost a superpower when you're that young, when you can gauge and be like, this is weird, because a lot of kids don't think, and it's like, you know, I'm 12 and, you know, I live in so-and-so, and, you know, I really don't like my mom is always yelling at me, telling me to get off Roblox. Then you start talking to them, and then you just get comfortable immediately, because, oh, you know, we have things in common.
Yeah.
And then it'll go give your address out. Like, the kids will tell it all.
Yeah.
That was the other thing I told them. Don't give our address to anyone. You don't even have to tell them what city we live in.
My rule is going to be, if you don't have a physical relationship with that person online, you don't have a relationship with them.
Like, I remember seeing a story, like, maybe a couple years ago. Somebody happened to add somebody from playing online, and they became best friends, and then he was the best man in the wedding. Like, sometimes...
Was he grown?
Yeah, they were grown. Okay. They were grown, yeah. But like I say, but even in situations like that, that can be, you never know. It might be a hidden agenda.
We just live in a crazy world.
We do.
We do. Because my mind, when you said that, my mind went to, that person could have been watching him.
They say the Romeos can take up to 6 months grooming.
Oh, yeah. And you'll be surprised, like, how many victims don't identify themselves as victims of trafficking. It's like, oh, that's my boyfriend. They don't understand it. To them, that is their boyfriend.
Where they identify that much with them. That's their life now.
But your boyfriend's not going to tell you to go sleep with men for money, to take care of y'all, to become millionaires and to take over the world, like Pinky and the Brain. Like, it just, that's just not normal. Like, and anybody that loves you is not going to want you to sell your body to take. No, that man going to get up and he going to get a job. He going to hustle. He going to do whatever it is.
But it's crazy. I see nowadays the younger generation, like the younger couples, like the 18, 19, between 21 and 22, they real deal letting their girlfriends like do that.
Mm-hmm. Because it's a business. I feel like from the trafficker side of it, it's business. So that's the grooming
part.
It's
$1 billion, almost $100 billion industry.
I know a young woman who used to be in the game, and she has friends that are still in the game, and they have, this one particular person has a boyfriend, but he has multiple girlfriends, and they all have a $20,000 or $30,000 goal for the month. And if they don't, a quota.
Oh, wow.
And if they don't have your 20, it's a problem.
That means no understanding for a slow month.
If you would, no, not dang. A slow day, not a slow month. If every day your quota is 2,000 and you come back with 1,900, you know, depending on who your pimp is, depending on who your trafficker is, you can't come in the house, you can't eat, you can't bake, you can't do nothing until you go get that money. And yes, it's glamorized, so it's not all like guerrilla style situations. There are women who drive Mercedes.
They have the image.
They keep their hair done. They're beautiful. They have the clothes, the luxury, but they're selling their soul.
You want to hear a crazy fact? So April 8th of 2020, we were pretty much in the midst of a lockdown and in COVID and such and everything. And here I'm looking at an article on the local Channel 4 news, and they stated at a stay-at-home order, sex trafficking is not slowing down because of the pandemic.
I think the reports for the statistics went down because you're not being able to get away because you're locked down. Some traffickers, they don't have to be in your face because they already have your control over your mind. And whatever fear they've instilled in you, that fear in your mind is greater than what
is actual. Isn't that the Romeo or the gorilla? That's not the gorilla.
It's a mixture. Like a Romeo has mind control still because right. Maybe not necessarily violence, but he'll leave me. You get what I'm saying? Like, okay, well, if I don't do this, he's going to leave me. I got to make him happy. We have to do this. The money is there, but the price is heavy.
Do you think women are targeted more easier than you would say, like, from a decade or decades ago with the social media influence? And a lot of the young women are influenced by the glamorous lifestyle.
Right.
When it comes to women, you know.
The statistics are going up. They're not going down.
Right. Well, the sad part about that is, yes, because of the image, because there's young people who, when you were graduating, I don't know what y'all aspirations were to do or to be, but a lot of our young people want to graduate and be strippers. It is like, oh, I'm finna graduate and I'm finna dance. But it is a job. It's not easy. It is hard. They see what they think is like, oh, you just walk around, you dance and you make money. No, it's a job. It is a job. It's a hustle.
People don't understand that.
The young people.
Yeah.
You're selling your sexuality to some stranger you don't even know for money.
I have a friend. She just retired. She had a retirement party Friday night.
At cocktails. Stripper?
I know that's
at
right.
At cocktails.
She retired. I love that.
She did. I think she did 10 years or something like that.
And you know what? I don't have nothing bad to say about like dancing and stuff like that. Like,
well, I mean, feel people like sex.
Right. Sex is always going to sell forever. The young women that I talk to that are like in the life, not like with my job, but like just people coming up to me or just reaching out to me for advice or just to talk. The person I have in mind, they're a sex worker. Right. And my thing to her is just like, you know, I don't judge you. It is a choice. And I'm just happy you don't have a pimp. I'm happy you don't have a trafficker. I'm happy that it's your choice. It is your body. It's your choice. Your moral values are whatever the goal is, the reasoning is, you're choosing to do it. I didn't have a choice.
Is it because we've kind of stopped teaching morality through maybe some Bible stuff and how to treat your body as sacred and protect it without kind of just throwing it all out there? And if you do get into it, what organizations or what clubs or how can you tell what clubs are legit?
I can't really answer the second question because I've never been a dancer. So I can't speak from that perspective. I would just be able to speak from like opinion, but I know that everything is not always what it seems, no matter what. But as far as going back biblical, I feel like the world we live in now, it's everything is a distraction. How many young people do you think are going to church and reading the Bible and going back to my body is my temple? That's not a thing that comes in the forefront of the mind. It's just what's right here.
It's not traditional no more.
Now it's look at how my temple looks like.
It's almost like finding that empowerment. Like, this is my body and I'm going to do what I want to do with it. And you have to respect it.
You're getting the tattoos, the surgeries.
It's the lifestyle.
The perfect body.
It's the culture.
It's the culture, definitely.
It's the culture, period.
You've been listening to the Collective Perspective Podcast, a mature show with the intention of making a difference in society.
I think this is a lot of material to take in. Definitely heart-wrenching. I don't want to say that I'm immune to it because I just can't possibly imagine going through something like that. And, you know, like Tatiana was saying, is it's like, yeah, you can talk about statistics and how people react and the psychological things of PTSD and all that, but if you haven't lived it, you're really not an expert. You can't be until you experience it. And it's not something that you just want to go experience, obviously. So
right.
The experts are those that have that experience and have been through that trauma. And you know what? I think it's amazing that you are who you are today and how strong-willed woman you are and a mother of two kids and doing them right and teaching them the right way.
Thank you.
Through your experiences of life. And I think you're amazing. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your experience with us.
Thank you. This was super amazing, and I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. And what was the name of the book and the website again?
It's Life Outside the Game, A Sex Trafficking Testimony. It can be found on lifeoutsidethegame.com and Amazon and me.
Thank you.
Definitely heartfelt, seriously.
And just so you know, the girls are looking at trying to do their own podcast, so maybe you'll catch them then.
Yes.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yes.
Peace.
Collectively.
You've been listening to the Collective Perspective Podcast, a mature show with the intention of making a difference in society.
So take a ride with us. Join us at the Collective Perspective Podcast, where your personal truths get a little power wash.
Like what you heard? Subscribe to the Collective Perspective Podcast whenever you listen to your podcasts.
You can also show support for our mission by going to buymeacoffee.com/collectivepod and donating whatever you feel inspired to. We appreciate any help keeping the lights on to bring you thoughtful and research content as part of this show.
Visit the Collective Perspective Podcast show page on mtsjax.fm, Jacksonville's new music and multimedia network sponsored by Mixed Theory Studios. You can find the transcripts of this episode along with the show notes, material references, links you heard about, and more.
Hey, I want to give a special shout out and a thanks to The Real Jay Dash, a Jacksonville hero, producer, and artist, for sharing his original music with this show, and to the Mixed Theory Studios for recording and production services. We couldn't have done it without either of them. Thank you so much.